Hello, and welcome to Marvel by the Month, a weekly podcast about the monthly publishing history of Marvel Comics. My name is Brian Stratton.
And I am Rob Milne.
And if we sound like we have slightly FM radio DJ voices this morning, it's because we were out late last night doing karaoke.
Yeah.
And it was a blast. What did you wind up doing? You did a bunch of stuff that was...
Did some Tenacious D.
Yeah.
That always gets you yelling a bit.
Yeah.
I can't remember what else. It's all a blur.
Yeah. I did a bunch of REM songs, and then I blew my voice out on the Metallica cover of Die Die My Darling. But we're in better shape than we deserve to be.
Yeah.
And we're very excited to start talking about March 1963 in Marvel publishing history. So real quickly, I'm just going to go through the seven issues that we're going to be talking about. So these are cover dated March 1963. Which means the newsstand date when they were actually for sale started in January 63. So we've got Amazing Spider-Man number one, written by Stan Lee and with art by Steve Ditko. So this is Spidey's first issue of his regular ongoing series. It's been about 6 months since he debuted, and Marvel obviously got a really strong and positive reaction because they basically started doing this series as quickly as they possibly could. So Lee and Ditko are back together for Spidey, which is great. We got Fantastic Four number 12, written by Stan, penciled by Jack Kirby, with inks by Dick Ayers. We have the first appearance of Iron Man in Tales of Suspense number 39, written by, well, plotted by Stan Lee and scripted by his brother Larry Lieber. Pencils and inks by a newcomer to the podcast, Don Heck. Fun fact, did you know Don Heck's name was actually Don Hell, but because of the comics code, they had to call him Don Heck?
I did not.
We also have Incredible Hulk number six, written by Stan Lee and illustrated by Steve Ditko. So this is the first time Ditko is actually penciling and I think maybe inking the Hulk. It's unclear. It might have been Dick Ayers. So Steve is all over that. Strange Tales 106 featuring the Human Torch. Again, plotted by Stan, scripted by Larry Lieber, and Dick Ayers pencils and inks this one. Tales to Astonish, number 41. It's another Stan Lee, Larry Lieber story with pencils and inks by Don Heck. And Journey into Mystery, number 90, written by Larry Lieber with Stan Lee, and penciled and inked by Al Hartley, who mostly did romance comics for Marvel. So you will note that there's not a lot of Jack Kirby this month.
Yeah, we assume it's a Kirby break.
Yeah, so which kind of makes sense. I think when these things would have been in production, probably would have been around the holidays. So maybe Kirby got some time off. We tried to figure out why he's only on Fantastic Four this month. Couldn't really get a definitive answer, but don't worry, he comes back.
And the bullpen is getting larger.
Yeah. Yep. They're definitely pulling in some of their folks who have been working mostly on sci-fi and monster and romance comics and pulling them into the superhero stuff. And that would, you know, eventually be where everyone was working, because that was pretty much all that Marvel will be publishing in the not too distant future. So that's our comics that we're going to be talking about. We also have a guest this week. Yeah. Hooray. It's Jamie Lewis.
Hey there.
Hey.
Glad to be here.
Hey, we're very happy to have you. Jamie is the frontman for a couple of bands in the Central Vermont area, Hell Priest and Maiden Iron, which is Vermont's premier Iron Maiden cover band or tribute band.
Tribute.
Right? Is cover band not... That's not
tribute's the right nomenclature.
Okay.
Yeah.
Preferred nomenclature.
Preferred.
Yes. But more importantly, I have known Jamie for about 2/3 of my life, and we used to work at the same comic book store in Barrie, Vermont.
That's right. The Comics Outpost.
Comics Outpost. If Mark Patterson is listening to this, we give a shout out to Mark.
Hey, Mark.
For setting up shop in that town and keeping it around for, man, like 20 years. Yeah, it was great. It's where Jamie and I met. It's where we met a lot of our mutual friends, developed a lifelong love of comics, and now it is all culminated in this moment with the two of us on a podcast.
Finally paid off.
The moment
we've made our entire life.
We've made it at last. Let's go ahead and start off our episode the way we usually do, with a little history lesson. Rob, do you want to take us into that and start talking about what was going on in January 1963?
Yeah, we have in on the January 1st, 63, Osamu Tezuka's, Tetsuon Otomo, Astro Boy, Japan's first serialized animated series based on the popular manga. So it debuted on Japanese television station Fuji TV. So that's a pretty big pop culture moment that probably made nothing but a fizzle in, you know, American culture at the time. But it was to mean something great.
Absolutely. I think I remember seeing Astro Boy reruns in the U.S. when I was a little kid. So this had been like very late 70s, very early 80s. But they were always sort of like late night or like really early morning when, you know, before the good cartoons had come on. Yeah, to my mind.
Me too. And yeah. I mean, Speed Racer was my favorite when there was something from that genre in general.
But, you know, lest we forget, there were comics things happening all over the world, not just in America, not just in New York City.
In one town.
Yeah. Now I get to do the grim racist news for January
63. Back in America.
Back in America, George C. Wallace, who was sworn in as the governor of Alabama on January 14th. And when he was being sworn in on his speech, he proclaimed, "In the name of the greatest people that have ever trod this earth, I draw the line in the dust and toss the gauntlet before the feet of tyranny, and I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever. Let us send this message back to Washington that from this day we are standing up, and the heel of tyranny does not fit the neck of an upright man." Definitely racial tensions are ratcheting up, along with like literally every other kind of tension in America. And as we've mentioned before in the podcast, you will start seeing these sorts of themes coming up subtly and overtly in Marvel Comics.
Certainly. And over in Vietnam, we have some news. So this all, you know, this all should shake out like you picture history if you've watched Forrest Gump. The Battle of Op Bach in South Vietnam began and was the first time that Viet Cong forces stood and fought against a major South Vietnamese attack. Despite outnumbering the Viet Cong 4-1 and having American armor, artillery, and helicopters, quote, "what should have been an ARVN victory turned into an exercise of everything that was wrong with the South Vietnamese army." So it didn't go well.
And talking of things that are going to show up in Marvel Comics, literally the tensions in Vietnam are explicitly referenced in Iron Man's debut. So it's important to remember that that's going on. It makes a lot of this stuff make a lot more sense. I found this thing and I thought it was worth mentioning because in January 63, the price of mailing a first class letter in the United States went from 4 cents to 5 cents. And it was the first increase in like 5 years or something like that. But the reason that I mention this is so the cover price of Marvel Comics in January 63 is 12 cents. So basically a comic book costs about 2.5 times what mailing a letter costs. And now in the U.S., mailing a first class letter is about 50 cents. And a new issue of a Marvel comic is about $4. So as postage has maintained a much more reasonable inflation rate, the price of comics has kind of gone through the roof. We use the Marvel Unlimited app to do all these. But if we were, you know, actually paying cover price for reprints of this stuff, it would pretty quickly become cost prohibitive when you're talking about doing, you know, a half dozen or eventually a dozen issues.
Yeah,
a week.
Our show would have to be brought to you by anything just to pay for us to pay buy those comics.
Yes, exactly.
How easy was it to get comic books in communist Russia at the time?
Oh, you know, impossible because they had no freedom. That's what made us great.
Can imagine a few being smuggled in, blowing some minds behind the red curtain. Speaking of the curtain,
yeah.
Also, 3 months after the U.S. and the USSR almost went to war during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Turkish government announced the deactivation and removal of its arsenal of American-supplied Jupiter missiles from Turkey. 6 days after Italy had announced their phase-out of the Jupiters, the missiles in Turkey, armed with nuclear warheads and within striking distance of cities in the Soviet Union, had been one of the reasons for the Soviet placement of missiles in Cuba.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it sometimes also that is painted from the American perspective as this crazy Khrushchev is just messing with us. And then you realize, of course, that they have missiles that could blow up any major city in Russia. So they were, you know, responding. And that it was very nice for people to decommission some Jupiter missiles.
So it wasn't a one-sided ordeal.
Everyone was at fault.
There's plenty of irrationality to go around.
Yeah, we all have arms on the doomsday clock.
Let's do quick recaps of all seven of the stories that we're going to be talking about this month. I will go ahead and lead off with Tales of Suspense number 39, which has the first appearance of a brand new Marvel character. He'd wind up going on to play some small role in Marvel Comics going forward. But Tales of Suspense number 39, Iron Man is Born. So this is the first appearance of Iron Man. If you are familiar with the movie origin of Iron Man, this is very similar. Like, they really, for the movie, they did not really change any of the major beats. They updated it a little bit to make it more culturally relevant, but it's essentially the exact same story. So you have millionaire playboy genius inventor Tony Stark. He is creating weapons for the United States to, quote, solve their problem in Vietnam, end quote. How'd that turn out, Tony? he winds up stepping on a landmine. He's captured by North Vietnamese forces led by Wong Chu. The landmine explosion pushed shrapnel into Tony Stark's chest. It's going to reach his heart within days, and there's nothing that can be done about it. But Wong Chu decides that he is going to lie to Tony Stark and say that they will operate and remove the shrapnel if Stark designs weapons for them. Stark realizes that they're bluffing, so he makes a deal with a fellow captor, Professor Yinsen, to build the first Iron Man suit of armor, which is designed to first save Stark's life by keeping the shrapnel from moving closer to his heart, and also give him a weapon to use against Wong Chu. As the armor is charging up, Wong Chu's forces are literally breaking down the door. Professor Yinsen sacrifices himself to buy Tony Stark a few more minutes for the armor to charge. Iron Man initially avoids Wong Chu's forces, and then he makes a dramatic appearance to confront Wong Chu and defeats him easily. Wong Chu's men flee. They are totally spooked by this Iron Man. And as Wong Chu is running to order the execution of all his prisoners of war, Iron Man lights a spray of oil and blows up an ammo dump near him, which apparently kills Wong Chu. And then Iron Man liberates all the prisoners. Turns out that Wong Chu is not actually dead. He does show up again. For the purposes of the story, it seems like, you know, he's gone. So that is the debut of Iron Man. Again, very, very similar to the movie, except, you know, instead of North Vietnamese forces, I think in the movie it's like Taliban or some ambiguous jihadi, you know.
Give the characters
Middle Eastern
back
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. I think they're in Afghanistan when the Humvee gets attacked.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Having the these historically relevant moments and having this universe fit within the times and the world that it does. The only problem is you don't have a timeless city and timeless things that happen. It is a very much of that place and time. So you have to do these updates to make it, you know, take away 40 years
right.
and make it relevant to, you know, the characters and the people who are reading them. So, that's really, That is a great, that's 13 pages, that Iron Man intro. It's a solid piece of writing from our friend Larry Lieber.
Yeah, well, we'll get to this in a bit, but so Stan Lee he plotted that one, and Jamie and I were actually talking about this before we started recording, but you can tell when Stan took a little bit more interest in the plotting, and I think this is one of those issues, but again, we'll get to that a little later on. What do you got for us next?
I have got Amazing Spider-Man number one, Spider-Man and Spider-Man versus the Chameleon. We have two great feature-length Spider-Man thrillers.
Hooray!
And this is great, again, tying things together. You have Spider-Man on the cover with the Fantastic Four, so already the cross-pollinating continues. Spidey's got his own series. And the first story picks up right where Amazing Fantasy number 15 left off. Peter Parker and his Aunt May are trying to pick up the pieces of their lives after Uncle Ben's murder. Money is tight. Peter can't cash checks made out to Spider-Man.
Yes. Yeah, he's still trying to be an entertainer at this point, but it's just not working.
He should have incorporated.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. If he was an S-Corp, this would not have been a problem.
J. Jonah Jameson also launches the crusade against Spider-Man in the pages of the Daily Bugle and says that men like his son, astronaut John Jameson, are the real heroes.
Little nepotiz there.
Tiny bit of nepotiz.
I starting to suspect that J. Jonah Jameson may not be an unbiased journalist.
What gave it away?
So soon in the series? So hero John Jameson, his launch goes wrong when a guidance module breaks loose from the capsule. So Peter changes into Spider-Man and commandeers a military plane to catch the capsule and insert a replacement guidance module, saving John Jameson's life. So you think this will turn out great. J. Jonah Jameson is going to think Spider-Man is cool now. He does not. He thinks that Spider-Man sabotaged the launch for attention and demands his arrest. Because that's slightly biased journalism, J.
Yep.
Jonah.
Yep.
So Jameson's crusade.
Fake news.
creates public pressure that results in a warrant for Spider-Man's arrest. Even Aunt May hopes they find that horrible Spider-Man and lock him up before he can do any harm. So Aunt May is against him.
Yeah, it's just, you know, old people get terrified by Fox News.
In the second story, Peter is still trying to solve his money troubles. So he breaks into the Baxter building to impress the Fantastic Four and ask for a job. That makes sense. If you have superpowers, though, and you're like, these guys are flying around in fancy air cars, I want to go, you know, hang out with them, get paid to do this. And
yeah. I feel like Ozzy Osbourne did something similar.
Yes. So he, you know, harasses the Fantastic Four a bit. He finds out that it's not a paying gig and they're not interested. Meanwhile, the Chameleon is using his amazing powers of disguise to steal scientific secrets and defense plans and sell them to America's enemies. He decides to impersonate Spider-Man, who the public already is suspicious of. That makes sense. Spider-Man catches up to Chameleon and captures him, but the Chameleon creates a distraction and disguises himself as a cop. The Chameleon is pretty cool in this story. The cop try to capture Spider-Man, who escapes, but in the melee, the Chameleon's disguise rips, revealing his Spidey costume under it, so he's taken into custody. But he does a classic, I'm not him, he's him. The story ends with the Fantastic Four reading about the incident with Reed, of course, fearing that Spider-Man might one day turn against the law.
Yeah, this is a recurring
Reed
thing.
Reed does that with anybody they meet.
Yeah, yeah. He's always convinced that someone's going to turn on him. Reed has real issues with trust and betrayal, apparently.
What do you got?
I got Fantastic Four number 12, which the story is called The Incredible Hulk. So this is the second crossover issue of the month, as you can tell from the title of the story. The whole point of this issue is the Fantastic Four are going to meet the Hulk for the first time. They're recruited by General Thunderbolt Ross to capture the Hulk. Ross believes that the Hulk is responsible for a bunch of missile sites in the Southwest being destroyed. Turns out the actual saboteur is Bruce Banner's assistant, Carl Cort. With a K.
See, with a K. Yes.
Two Ks.
Is there another Carl?
Yeah. Is there another famous? Yeah.
Hitting the marks?
Yeah, yeah. He's a literal card-carrying communist. He has a membership card in his wallet, and he's given the name The Wrecker. The Wrecker winds up kidnapping Rick Jones, the Hulk's buddy, leaves a note for the Hulk telling him to get rid of the Fantastic Four if he wants to save Rick's life. The Hulk ambushes the Fantastic Four. He holds his own against all four of them until the Wrecker's robot incapacitates him with a beam fired from underground. The Fantastic Four go underground to capture the Wrecker. The Hulk escapes and turns back into Banner, who is there to shake Reed's hand as the Fantastic Four depart to return to New York. So ends in a little bit of a stalemate, but there is some good Hulk versus Thing action. Which we'll get to in a little bit.
And much like a wrestling match, they leave it a little ambiguous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No one loses face. Everyone, you know, they put each other over, and they're ready for the rematch.
There's no clear heel there. It seems to be that, you know, both the Hulk and the Thing are kind of dicks, really.
Yeah, yeah. No.
That's the characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a running thing that we've talked about in the past on the podcast, is that the Hulk initially is not anything close to a hero. Like, he maybe inadvertently does a heroic thing every now and then, but no, sometimes he's like outright villainous in what he does.
Well, let me take you on a journey into mystery.
Ooh.
Number 90. So we have Thor drawn as he's never been drawn before.
And hopefully never will be again.
Yeah. And he is trapped by the carbon copy man. So this doesn't sound quite as cool as, you know, Dr. Doom, but we'll get into it. This is going to be a quick recap, short story. Aliens known as the Zartans, aka the carbon copy men, kidnap and impersonate key individuals around the city and create chaos by issuing bizarre orders. Thor investigates and finds their ship, but winds up separated from his hammer and turns into hashtag lame Dr. Blake. After recovering his hammer, Thor beats up the carbon copy men, who surrender and agree to his demand that they turn themselves into trees.
The end.
The end.
Less said, the better.
Don't try to wrap your head around it too much. It's not going to help you.
Yeah.
No. Overt communist reference, but I noticed the the impersonators causing chaos amongst, you know, society. It's still very much that the fear of infiltration.
Yeah. Manchurian candidate, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yep. The destruction of civic order. Yeah. I'm going to do another quick recap here for Strange Tales number 106, The Threat of the Torrid Twosome. So this is a Human Torch solo story. Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, he gets conned by Carl Zante, Z-A-N-T-E, only slightly better known as the Acrobat, into teaming up with him as the Torrid Twosome, because the Acrobat convinces Johnny that Reed is keeping all the Fantastic Four's money and glory for himself. So the Acrobat basically fools Johnny into busting into a bank vault. He says that there's a teller who trapped himself inside, and Johnny needs to bust that person out. But of course, I mean, surprise, he's there to rob the place. With the help of the rest of the Fantastic Four, Johnny captures the Acrobat, and he's welcomed back onto the team by the end of the story. He insists that he was suspicious of the Acrobat the entire time, but I don't know, it's not really written.
I don't know, I read it, and it didn't seem that way.
Yeah.
It went to great pains to make him not seem suspicious.
Yes.
On another short story, let's take you into Tales to Astonish. Number 41, Prisoner of the Slave World. So this is another Ant-Man story. And this is now Ant-Man going to a different world. So it's another Larry Lieber story where scientists are mysteriously going missing.
This has happened at least once in the last couple months.
It happens in Thor. It happened it was a different scientist, but lame Dr. Blake has been also captured with a bunch of other scientists.
Right.
And Henry Pym has been too. So just kind of try to shake out another idea.
Yeah.
Hank Pym knows it's only a matter of time before he's kidnapped as well. And it happens when a window washer douses him with a paralyzing chemical. Don't trust window washers.
If you happen to be a professional window washer and you're listening to this, take no offense.
Yes. Yeah. We know this is not representative of your fine brotherhood of professionals.
Unless you are one that does spray paralyzing chemicals on people and then, you know, maybe get yourself in a comic book.
Yeah. In which case, we may have work for you.
Pym is brought to another dimension where an alien warlord named Kula, it's hard to say, is forcing Earth scientists to build him a death ray. Ant-Man figures out how to control the alien insects on Kula's dungeon and uses them to activate Kula's own weapon, killing him. Freedom fighters storm the dungeon, free the scientists, and return them to their own dimension. The end.
The end.
So his helmet can talk to alien ants.
Yeah. Is there anything he can't do?
Is there anything he can?
Is there anything he can do?
All right, there's a lot of issues, but there's one more, Brian.
Yeah, this is it. So Incredible Hulk number 6, the Incredible Hulk versus the Metal Master. So unlike the last few, this is actually a full-length issue.
Can I just say that is that's a villain I can get behind, the Metal Master.
The Metal Master.
Metal Master.
I imagine the new Mad Max movie, the guy who's on the, you know, with the electric guitar who just rides on the front of the thing with speakers behind him. Yes. He should be called the Metal Master.
He absolutely should. So this is a full issue long story, and there's a lot going on, but I'm just going to condense it because there's a lot of weird peripheral stuff that also happens. There's a lot of dead ends we could go down. It's a bonkers, bonkers story, but here's the gist. There's an alien. He calls himself the Metal Master. He has the ability to control and reshape anything that's made of metal. He's basically a prototype of Magneto. He uses this ability to hold the world hostage, but the Hulk stops him by making a huge gun that looks like it's made of metal, but is actually made of wood and cardboard. So it's a giant fake gun. It's a Potemkin gun. And when the Metal Master gets too close to try to figure out why his powers don't work on it, Hulk just grabs him and forces him to put everything back the way it was and then get into his ship and leave and never come back. And that's the story. So there you go. 7 stories. We're going to take a quick break. And then when we get back, we are going to talk about what actually mattered this month. So let's talk about what actually mattered this month, cover dated March 1963. So we're going to go in order of what we believe was probably the most important stuff to the least. And my bid for what I think is the most important issue this month is Amazing Spider-Man number 1. I think this is important for a number of reasons. The first is it's the introduction of J. Jonah Jameson, who's right there from the first issue of the ongoing story. I think JJJ is probably the best supporting character in all of comics. He's the reason why Peter Parker can't use Spider-Man to make money, which is the biggest issue in Peter Parker's personal life. And it also ensures that Spidey will never be trusted like the rest of the Marvel heroes are. So like right from the jump, they've created this complication. So Spider-Man is going to be different from the rest of the Marvel universe. And it's all because of Jameson. I think it's a really good use of the character. And I think it's also later in his career, Steve Ditko gets a little more explicit with his political views. I would say skepticism of mainstream media is one of those. This is a really early articulation of that, where like Jonah Jameson is obviously spreading lies. You know, I mean, he's distorting the truth.
It's super biased or just a lie.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And he's just showing the destructive power of that.
I don't find the exact word balloon quote, but there is something in there to the effect of, if you shout something loudly enough, everyone will believe you, or, you know, it's,
yeah, yeah.
Geez, if that doesn't, but now we know like that's a modern,
that's not the case at all. Wow. Yeah. That never worked out.
So yeah, Jameson, he's super, super important for the rest of and he's a character who's still a major part of the Spider-Man universe to this day. It's also one of the very first Marvel crossover issues. So again, as the Marvel universe is, you know, in its infancy, right away, Spider-Man is, you know, being inserted into the Fantastic Four's world. And the Fantastic Four is Marvel's biggest comic at the time. So this is a big bump for him. And it's also the first appearance of the Chameleon. He's not the biggest or most well-known Spider-Man villain. I don't think he's shown up in any of the movies so far.
No, but he's still in comics to this day. Yeah. So sometimes in a huge arcs with Deadpool and Spider-Man together. So there's lots of Chameleon still.
Yeah, yeah. So he's, you know, he comes back time and time and time again. And also is just... tying back to what you were saying earlier, Jamie, about how, you know, like impersonation and infiltration is a major theme in the stories of the time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have the Chameleon, who's literally his only power is to do that. And of course, he's trying to steal government and military secrets and sell them to the Reds. So yeah, Spider-Man number one, I would say is if you're going to read one issue this month, read that one. If you're going to read two issues this month, what would you nominate for number two, Rob?
Well, then we have a real crossover in Fantastic Four number 12. So that would definitely be second place. There's a lot of good fun just watching the Hulk interact with the Fantastic Four altogether.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Hulk versus Thing, like from the minute both of these characters existed, everyone just wants to see them wrestle. That's what I want. I want some wrestling.
Can I interject really quickly? Early on here, we established the Thing's preference in musical taste. They're coming out of what is the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And he says, personally, I get my kicks from lowdown New Orleans jazz.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Sounds right for Mr. Grimm.
Ben's a swinger.
So, yeah, we get this crossover. We get Hulk versus the Thing, which is they do pay off on a pretty good fight. It doesn't it, you know, like we said earlier or hinted at, wisely resolves before, you know, we can really say who won.
Yes.
Which is perfect for that. And then the first appearance of the Wrecker, but not that Wrecker.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the Thor villain with the
magic. I don't see a crowbar anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little less important of a Wrecker.
The Wrecking Crew, that's his cronies, right? The guy with the ball and
there's Absorbing Man, Crusher Creel, who is the
main
guy.
Wait, is he part
of
the Wrecking Crew? Is he a different? No, there's two guys who use ball and chains.
No, oh, no, I'm confusing the ball and chains already.
Yeah, the old balls and chains is. I'm just saying that because we're going to get added if we're wrong about this. People are going to at us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. We'll have to read other things.
Yeah, come on,
I only
man.
Read comic books.
Yeah, don't make me read prose.
Wait, I thought you guys were prose.
Well, yeah, I don't know what would have led you to believe that. Yeah, no, Fantastic Four. I mean, almost every issue of Fantastic Four so far has been really good. So that's definitely one that's worth checking out and enjoying.
Yeah, Stan obviously keeps that cradled in his arm, swaddled.
Does not let his brother anywhere. It's also the only issue that Jack Kirby draws this month. So that's another reason. Like if you like all right thinking individuals love Jack Kirby's artwork, you definitely want to read this one.
You guys might already know this, but I'm just noticing the Hulk only has three fingers on each hand and three toes.
Whoa, really?
A lot of these panels.
What?
I mean, besides the thumb, he has a thumb and three fingers.
You're right. I wonder if that's a one-off or... If that's no, that's definitely across multiple pages.
Gone into Simpson's hands.
Yep. Well, there's another mystery that we'll have to take a journey into at some point.
There's a no prize in if you can tell us where one of the fingers on every one of the digits on every extremity disappeared too.
That's really crazy. It's also crazy that, like, I've never noticed that. I feel like that was one of those things that I always noticed as a kid. It always bugged me when cartoon characters only had three fingers and a thumb.
Right. I almost wonder if Kirby was, you know, throwing it in there as a curveball. Let's see who'll notice this.
Yeah.
And Ben is the same.
Well, Iron Man has four fingers, so I'm going to talk about Iron Man now. How's that for a transition?
Fair enough.
There's some professional...
Smooth segue.
Some professional radioing. Tales of Suspense, number 39. So I ranked this number three in my personal list of what mattered. Not that it's not important. I think all three of these top three issues are definitely worth reading. The only reason that I ranked it third is just I feel like the other two things that we mentioned paid off on things that had been building for a while. Like, so there was a lot of anticipation for more Spider-Man after his debut. There was a huge amount of anticipation for Hulk versus Thing that had been building for a long time. And Tales of Suspense 39 gives us the first appearance of Iron Man, but it's the first time we're seeing this character. So it kind of comes out of nowhere. But I think, comes out with a pretty strong origin. He does turn out to be pretty important in the Marvel Universe, winds up launching the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. And, you know, again, like we mentioned earlier, his origin story is really unchanged in the cinematic version. So they got it right on the first beat. I really do think that this is one of those issues where even though, you know, on paper, Stan plotted a lot of issues and his brother Larry Lieber scripted them, I do think Stan was really hands-on with Iron Man's origin, just because it moves really quickly. It's tightly plotted. There's some strong beats in it, and there's not a lot of stuff that we have seen before, whereas Larry tends to recycle some stuff.
Yeah, there's no trapdoors. There's no, you know, it. There would be some telltale Larry, you know, element in here, plot element that seems bizarre if he hadn't had more guidance, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's the first appearance of Wong Chu, who does wind up being a Marvel Iron Man villain. He shows up a few more times. Not a major villain, but he does show up again. And it's kind of racist, but it's honestly, it could have been a lot worse. And I'm not trying to be an apologist for that, but if you go back and look at some popular media of the time and see how East Asian folks are represented, it's a lot of Coke bottle glasses and buck teeth and L's being replaced with R's and vice versa in their dialogue. And this issue largely steers clear of that. There is kind of an uncomfortable choice for the coloring where they actually corrected it in the Marvel Unlimited app version of it. But the original coloring, which I saw in one of the Marvel Epic collections I read recently, they have this really jaundiced yellowy color that like no human being, unless they are suffering from kidney failure, actually has.
And what's the villain's son? Is it Wong Chu?
Wong Chu.
So yeah. So I see that he is a super martial artist.
Yes.
And a villain. So it's probably not until later, what, the 70s, sort of the Bruce Lee era, mm-hmm. where the martial artist becomes the hero in the American comics and cinema and whatnot.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. I think like once like Shang-Chi shows up and there's sort of that like 70s explosion of totally. Martial arts movies. Yeah. I think that's a good catch.
And I think that this issue, Don Heck is like Don Heck's art coming into the universe is great. I love Kirby, but I just think this is that is another piece that makes this story. So like all the beats are hit. Everything is really clear. Everything is has, you know, there's a lot of drama in it and a lot of lighter line style.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see some good art, you know, joining Kirby's great art.
Yeah.
Or this is great art too. I'm not going to slight Don, but I just mean that there are some other fill-ins. I think Ditko does it too, but you know, in the Journey into Mystery comic, we don't have a great example of that this month. Yeah. So like we had somebody come out, take a swing and a miss. Yeah. And
I enjoy it. This is Don Heck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's well done. It's sharp.
Yeah. And it's a very dense story. But the action is really pretty clear in it. I think Don Heck gets kind of a bad reputation, not a bad reputation, but I mean, Don Heck is the early Marvel Comics artist who was not Jack Kirby and not Steve Ditko. And I feel like he definitely suffers from, you know, because he's not an all time great genius. You know,
He's the Ringo of the bullpen for this, you know, he's still great.
He's a perfectly serviceable artist. And sometimes he does really good stuff. I remember, like Harlan Ellison talked some crap about him one time and then like had to walk all of it back. But I mean, again, the list of people who Harlan Ellison has talked crap about is,
not a short list.
It's not a short list.
And there's other, just to expand on this more, like the blocking. So that's part of what makes the story so clear is like, he's doing like cinematic blocking.
Yes.
And that is different than how Kirby lays things out too. So there are just setups where there's a shadow, the characters in the foreground, but we're cropped in really close and they're like off to the side of the panel and just, you know, very different things. And and I think it works well. And that's what helps to sell this story as like this compact, great origin.
Yeah, I agree.
And for some reason, is it Wong Chu again?
Yes.
Has a filing cabinet full of rocks.
Yeah. That does seem
those
like
rocks are meticulously organized.
That does stink of a Larry Lieber plot device.
I think it's probably something along the lines of like you know, Stan is like, oh, he gets crushed by a filing cabinet. It's like, move on. It doesn't matter. He just needs to get held up. And Larry's like, we have to explain how a filing cabinet could keep Iron Man down.
Wong Chu's rock collection.
Yeah, there you go. Sure, why not?
Okay, well, I'd say the next piece, or arguably tied for this, that mattered this month would be Incredible Hulk number 6.
Yep.
So, one, you got a whole issue of Steve Ditko art in addition to Spider-Man, but Steve Ditko drawing the Hulk is its own thing.
And Steve put 4 fingers on him.
Yeah.
Ah, there we go. Controversy.
Fingers are back.
Yep.
And I feel like the Hulk is everywhere this month.
Yeah. No, he is. He's not working for scale this month.
Yeah. And he's still, you know, not fully figured out, you know, as we say, they're just throwing things at the wall every month to try to get the Hulk's powers worked out.
Yeah. But not for much longer.
I think the Metal Master, he is a good villain. Like he is one of the kind of villain that you need for the Hulk, which is nobody can defeat him.
Yeah.
He just shows up and starts wrecking things.
Yes.
This is also still, to remind everyone, the smarter Hulk. So we have, we're still carrying that through.
Yep.
But if you like Steve Ditko's art, this is worth checking out. So he didn't draw the Hulk very often, and there's a lot of Ditko weirdness.
Yes. Yeah. That's putting it mildly.
The Hulk with Banner's head is just the weirdest thing.
Yeah. Super bizarre.
And it doesn't make any sense in the context of the plot either. It's just, like he wears Banner Head Hulk winds up wearing a rubber Hulk mask so that no one can see that he's Bruce Banner.
Yep.
But then the mask gets removed. But then
by then his normal Hulk head has filled in the mask, I guess.
It's just so strange. It's
weird Scooby-Doo thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and this is the last issue of the Hulk for a while. So the initial run only lasted 6 issues. And then they were like, well, I mean, obviously, you know, the sales numbers must not have been where they wanted them to be. So they're like, well, Hulk's going to be a supporting character for a little while, and we'll figure out what to do going forward. But, eventually he comes back. But
there are a lot of great moments and just cool things. The Metal Master throwing tons of like forming metal as he like takes jeeps and things apart and forming that over the Hulk to make a cage is a very, it's like a Kirby-esque scene, but with Ditko drawing it, it's just weirder. Like everything gets a little weirder with Ditko.
Totally. Yeah. He really has that surreal, psychological, psychotropic style to, you know, everything he does. It's good stuff. I think the last few, if you are crunched for time and you don't feel like reading every issue this month, these next 3 are probably the 3 that you can just skip altogether. The first one of those being Strange Tales number 106, Human Torch solo story. The only thing that really matters about this story is that finally, they clarify that Johnny Storm does not have a secret identity. This is something they added in when he starts having solo adventures in Strange Tales, because the thinking of the time was that any solo superhero needed to have a secret identity, because that was just one of the superhero tropes. But they established really early on in the story that he does not have a secret identity, that he never had a secret identity, and that no one in the town of Glendale mentioned his being the Human Torch because they were respecting his privacy.
But they all knew it. He's still like trying to maintain a secret identity and then finds out, which just makes him sound even dumber.
Human Torch comes off as a giant idiot in this entire issue. Like he gets snowed by the most obvious con man in the world. He doesn't realize that everyone knows he's the Human Torch. Like,
he's like, how did this guy find me? And Sue's like, everybody knows you live here, man. And it's just ridiculous. But at least they got rid of it. I mean, they hinted at it an issue or two ago, and this time they finally just said it's not a thing. Tales to Astonish. It's not even worth reading. I actually read it twice just trying to keep track of the very scant plot, and it left my brain immediately again because it was just such nonsense.
Yeah, yeah, there's nothing in here that winds up having any impact on the character or the Marvel universe going forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's just more in what we're building is the Larry files of like weird.
I do feel so bad about this. Like, I really don't. I know Larry Lieber is still alive, and he's. I don't want him to ever just hear us talking trash
like,
about him.
I feel like Larry developed as a writer. And this is the early shot at it. And yeah. This is so we're just like making fun of his like school papers at this point, like grade school. That was your summer. Yeah. That's your summer report, man.
He had the unfortunate luck to be evolving and developing as a writer on some of the most historically significant comics of all time.
So that's why he just like you're the guy who's gonna get this rash of crap right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he was just writing, you know, like generic 1950s golden age superhero things that, you know, just wound up getting used to wrap fish with, like no one would care, right, you know. Right. But he's writing Ant-Man, he's writing Iron Man, yeah, he's writing, you know, all these other characters. He's writing Thor.
But again, sorry, Larry.
Yeah, we love you, Larry.
Well, you know, and we're looking at this from where we stand in our day and age, which would be their future,
right?
Just to be clear, you know, I'm sure, you know, the idea that the things they were writing, the characters they were creating, could become such a huge part of the mythology of our entire planet loves the, you know, these iconic characters here. So
this was just pulp stuff to, you know, make some money. With a little bit of the spark of genius within it. And that was enough to keep it alive. And that, yeah. So also to Larry's credit, he got to be part of this universe.
I was going to say, it's like, you know, I can say anything I want about Larry Lieber, but you know, he has co-creator credits for Thor and Iron Man, and I don't.
Right. So, yeah. So shut up.
I should just shut my mouth.
But we have a podcast, so.
Yeah, it would be a very bad podcast if we weren't talking.
Yeah, it's the last one and the worst.
Yeah, this is bad.
Worse than something we would say to Skip is a Journey into Mystery number 90. So it's just another weird Thor story, and it's. Who's the artist on this again?
Al Hartley was the artist. He was primarily a penciler on romance and fashion comics. He had a run on Patsy Walker, who we will wind up getting to when she becomes Hellcat in the 70s. But at this point, she's just sort of like an Archie Comics type fashion romance character.
It shows the art is very much in that. You know, you can see that.
Yeah, I mean, he's just not an action illustrated.
Yeah, everything looks posed very weird.
Thor looks pretty.
He does look very pretty.
He got even prettier.
Yeah, look at his hair. Look at that. It's
gorgeous.
Yeah, he's got some volumizing conditioner this month.
That would be great if that, you know, in light of, I would lovingly enjoy it if you could just change all the words to that story and just make it more about Thor conditioning and stuff. Yes. Like, you know,
Thor gets a makeover.
It would be cool. It would actually be a better comic.
Yeah, but as it is, I mean, this whole thing just reads as a very weak retread of Fantastic Four number 2 when the Skrulls come to Earth. And it's just, yeah, again, like these characters don't show up again. Nothing happens here to, like, there's no Asgard. There's no like development of the supporting cast. There's too much lame Dr. Blake. By too much, I mean there's any lame Dr. Blake.
But there's quite a bit of lame Dr. Blake. And every time you can get the gist of this if you've heard these podcasts now. If there's Thor with, you know, with the Norse mythology, we're all for it. If it's Thor with a lot of this guy dropping his hammer for more than 60 seconds and then running around trying to figure out a dumb way to grab the hammer again and change back without anyone seeing him, that's where we put the hashtag lame Dr. Blake on there. And
I feel like we do need to have just like a warning tag on any episode that contains like more than 4 panels of lame Dr. Blake. It's like caution contains lame Dr. Blake.
Once again, the obligatory the secret identity coming into play.
Yeah, exactly. It was like a totally, you did not need this for the character, which they prove later, but, you know.
It takes a while.
It takes way too long. So that's our summary of everything that mattered this month. Let's go ahead and take another quick little break. And when we come back, we will talk about our favorite panels from the month. So, yeah, let's talk about our panels of the month. I will go first because I started talking first. And I'm going to say my favorite panel this month, and I think one of the ones that just sums up the thing I really love about my favorite story from this month was from Amazing Spider-Man number one. It's page four, panel five. It's when Spidey is trying to cash a check. And this is something where, so we saw in an early issue of Fantastic Four, where the Fantastic Four go bankrupt, and they're having to worry about things like paying the rent and, you know, how are they going to get out to Hollywood, and they have to hitchhike, you know, to make a movie to earn some money. So we've seen Marvel introduce the concept of, you know, superheroes having real world problems. But Spider-Man is where, man, they zero right in on it. Lee and Ditko really create this character who has very, very relatable problems and challenges. So Spider-Man has he's continuing to do his entertaining. His promoter asks him who he should make the check out to. And Spidey says, well, just make the check out to Spider-Man. And the promoter's like, all right, you're the boss. You're going to have a mighty tough time cashing it. Spidey's like, we'll just see about that. And then cut to the panel in question. Spidey says, I'd like to cash this check. And the banker says, I'll have to see some identification. What about my costume? Don't be silly. Anyone can wear a costume. Do you have a social security card or driver's license in the name of Spider-Man? No, I don't. So it's like, I mean, poor Peter Parker, like this. He's just had this terribly traumatic thing happen where losing his uncle, you know, he and Aunt May are on the verge of losing everything. And like the one thing he might be able to help with is the bills. And he can't even do that. And then right after this is where we see J. Jonah Jameson launching his crusade against Spider-Man. So it's like, even if he could cash a check, even if he figures that out, no one's going to hire him going forward to be an entertainer. So it's like, this is basically the moment where Peter Parker is screwed forever.
Yeah. Peter Parker's kryptonite is J. Jonah Jameson and money. Yeah. And
money.
Yes. Yeah.
Peter Parker's kryptonite is life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's just one panel opposite end, Kirby. It's in Fantastic Four, number 12, page five, panel one. And it's just Ben sulking on the couch. He looks like just the grumpiest little kid, basically because he had been mistaken for the Hulk and attacked by the military. And he was like, how could they mistake us? Like, and he said, and that's it. Can you imagine those lunkheads thinking I was the Hulk? Next, they'll be mistaking me for Frankenstein. And he's just got his arms crossed and he's just super grumpy. And Reed and Sue are leaning in like parents talking to him. So just that little scene for some reason just made me giggle over and over again. And there were a lot of great Spider-Man panels that were, you know, more dynamic and cool Ditko stuff. But I just, for some reason, the way it's like really heavy lines too on this, like it's like Kirby just knew exactly what this was going to look like and laid it down. So that's mine.
Awesome. Jamie, you got a panel?
Yeah. Let's see here. I know that this is a PG show, so we'll keep it's pretty simple. It's page one of the Iron Man origin story here. And I mean, he is quite literally ripping apart what looks like a rock face or something, but it's just very indicative of the idea of birth. Iron Man is born. Here I come bursting into the world.
Yep.
Invincible.
It's a really striking image, too.
It is, yeah.
Like it's heavy, heavy blacks on the, you know, on about half the page. And then you just have this Franken robot, like, you know, crashing through. And yeah, if you were a kid in 1963 and you were flipping through the issues on the stand, you'd be like, okay, you have my attention.
Yeah, it's super graphic too. Like they didn't again, this is the Don Heck thing, like they didn't lay things out that way very often. That is it, ready made for a t-shirt. It's just
absolutely
like perfectly laid out, and it's like very, I don't know, graphic design perspective, it looks really great. And
yeah, it'd be a great poster, t-shirt for sure. Yeah. Album cover.
Yep. Well, three good panels from generally, I think, a really pretty good month of Marvel Comics. Some really awesome stuff happening. Origin of Iron Man, first issue of Spidey's ongoing series, first Hulk v Thing fight. And then some forgettable stuff. But that's the way the stuff goes. Still, I think you know, every month of Marvel Comics has had something that just transformed the characters and the way they relate to each other and the universe that they're building. It's really a wild ride. I wasn't exactly sure, you know, what this podcast is going to be like when we decide to start doing it. But this is like the part where I feel like, you know, the roller coaster is ticking up that first hill. And like, well, by the time we get about five episodes further and the Avengers and the X-Men show up, like it's just a thrill ride from that point on.
Yeah, the universe is painted much like it has been. And that's the other thing to keep in mind, like as these things are being revealed, you'll notice that the timing in the cinematic universe for many of these things is similar, mm-hmm. other than the Fantastic Four because of rights and problems like that. But you see each of these characters roll out in their individual movies. You see them do their things. They come together. It's and that's right where we're headed. And we're headed for, yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, I agree. I thought this would be just some sort of exercise in history reporting on these comics and maybe having to really, and we have to, you know, note a lot of the time problems.
Yes.
But it's completely it's getting crazy.
Yeah. Jamie, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. It was great to hang out with you guys and talk comic books for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Patterson would be so proud of us. We've hit the big time. Do you want to let us know where we can find information or anything about Hell Priest and Made in Iron on internet? Facebook is up.
Yeah, Facebook. We do have our demo is up on Spotify. Mm-hmm. The Hell Priest demo. There's definitely some random live footage of Made in Iron out there on YouTube if you can hunt it out.
Nice.
And then, yeah, we have a Facebook page for Made in Iron. So, yeah.
Cool,
check
cool.
it out.
Check it out. They're awesome, good fun. I think that's it. So, you can also check out Marvel by the Month on the internet.
That's a thing.
That's a thing that we do. So marvelbythemonth.com. And honestly, the only social channel I'm going to promote is our Instagram channel because I think it is the best. So at Marvel by the Month on Instagram. Follow us. We've got a nice little community building there. And, you know, this is a very visual medium. So, hey, Instagram is perfect. Yeah. So thanks for listening to another episode of this thing. I am still Brian Stratt.
And I think I am still Rob Milne.
All right. And we will see you next week for next month. We'll be right back.